back to the Zero to Hero podcast. I am your host, Denny Duma, producer Carl. How are you, my buddy friend? Good, man. The anticipation is built up for this guest, Carl. We had originally scheduled a December podcast, and she was on the fence about coming, so she said, no, I'm just kidding. Something came up. And it was work-related.
I was preparing for the holidays.
No, it was work-related, and I respect that, and but we're very excited to have her on tonight. Tegan Cochran, how are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely.
Thanks for coming. I'm excited to be here.
We are very, very excited to have you. A little background on Tegan. She is a current member of the Team Canada Cycling, or the Canada Team Cycling. Oh, update? Okay.
Right, so you guys can edit, right? So post-crash? No. Am I throwing off the flow?
She will be back on Team Canada eventually.
Maybe. yeah, so... yeah, I was former member of Team Canada as a track cyclist, as a sprint track cyclist.
Cool.
Yes.
Like it. And just recently has got into the world of entrepreneurship and is now running a marketing consulting business.
That's right.
I always start every podcast by asking my guests to describe themselves in three words or small phrases. Really gives me a little bit of context into who you are and who you think you are.
And okay.
A little something to build off early.
Okay. Energetic.
Really?
Slightly. Passionate. And adventurous.
I like that. Passionate is a word that I throw around a lot. Maybe just expand on passionate, where, and why.
So I feel... that everything in my life is driven from passion. Everything that I, you know, aim for is driven from passion. So whether that's entrepreneurship or whether that's cycling or whether that's my education, first and foremost, I need to be passionate about what I'm pursuing. I find that in life, I don't feel fulfilled if my endeavors aren't fueled by passion. And so, yeah, and I'm just passionate, you know, I'm passionate about animals, I'm passionate about hiking, I'm passionate about simple things in life, you know, passion doesn't need to be, I think, you know, just what you do, it doesn't need to be your career, it can be little things as well, you can live passionately, love passionately, so I'm just passion-filled.
I like that. What does passion mean to you?
What
like you say, I'm passionate about animals, I'm passionate about work.
Yeah.
But like define that, because I think different people can define it very differently.
Yeah. I think passion for me is more of a feeling. When I feel passionate, I feel throughout my whole body, just happiness and feelings of elation and just a drive to continue pursuing or knowing more about that particular subject or trying to become better at whatever that skill I'm passionate about. So really it's a driver, and yeah, I guess that's how I describe passion.
I like that. Early, we have, it seems like we have very similar upbringings in terms of being completely absorbed in athletics from a very young age.
Completely.
And with you, it was a very family environment because of your parents.
Yeah.
But maybe just chat a little bit about your athletic history from the early days.
Yeah. So I grew up in Kelowna, and I was a dual sport athlete. So I started with hockey. I always wanted to be a hockey player. And so that's what I did. And I also did soccer. So hockey was my winter sport. Soccer was my summer sport, which worked out very nicely. And that's what I did. I mean, I dabbled in a lot of other sports. I dabbled in, you know, wakeboarding and snowboarding and rollerblading. I mean, everything. I was did running and track and field, every sport you can imagine, volleyball. But my main sports were hockey and soccer. I played on Team BC for both hockey and soccer and made it to, you know, the national training camp for hockey when I was 16. So I decided to pursue hockey full on. I had extremely supportive parents, and yeah, so I was fortunate enough to have every opportunity to pursue sports growing up, and yeah, it was pretty special.
When I was a kid, it like completely consumed my life.
Yeah.
And it was three seasons for a long time. It was basketball, soccer, and then high school football for me. But basketball was always like my thing and where I, my passion,
really?
Where I, what I loved.
Yeah.
And I guess what, or when did you, where does motivation come from as a kid through sport? And why did you fall in love with hockey, I guess?
Well, my, I don't even know if it was a motivation. It was just natural instinct for me. Like I said, I describe myself as extremely energetic. So I always wanted to be moving. I always wanted to be playing. I'm a very kinesthetic learner. So I learned through touching, feeling, and doing. And so sports was just natural for me. It was what came so easy for me. I wanted to play everything. I was and still am slightly aggressive. So all of my friends were guys. I was very much a tomboy. You know, I always dreamt of having an older brother, but I was the youngest of three girls. And, you know, I looked up to my dad, and my dad was a pro hockey player. He played in the NHL for 10 years. And so he was my, you know, my idol. I wanted so desperately to play in the NHL, but unfortunately I was a female, so that wasn't going to pan out. But, you know, I took it as far as I could. I, in my grade 11th year, I tore my ACL for the first time, and I had a full reconstruction surgery. And then the following year I did it again. A full ACL, MCL, PCL, meniscus, the whole thing. I blew my knee up.
Same knee?
Same knee.
Oh
yeah.
My gosh.
So, you know, I probably came back a bit too soon. You know, in my grade 11 year, yeah, the opportunity for playing down in the States and all your scholarship opportunities start to roll in. And I didn't want to pass any of that up, right? I wanted to be performing at my peak. And so, you know, I really tried to rehab quickly, and you know, that probably bit me in the ass a little bit because I tore it again. So
growing up, do you remember like some big goals you had with hockey? You say playing the NHL.
Oh yeah, but I wanted to be an Olympian. Yeah. From the day I can remember, my one goal in life was to become an Olympian. I mean, I found a sheet of paper last year from grade three, and it said, what do you want to be when you grow up? And it was, I want to be an Olympian, you know, because I couldn't be in the NHL and I couldn't be a pro hockey player. Being an Olympian was what I could be. Yeah, I know I could be. I grew up watching Hailey Wickenheiser on TV and just being like, this girl's so sick. Like, I want to be like her. Right. And so my whole life, I'm like, I can be an Olympian. And I will work tirelessly to get there. And, you know, I got a little taste of it. I went to the under 18 Team Canada camp, top 40 girls in the country, which was awesome. And yeah, I tore my ACL 2 weeks after that, cross training. So that was pretty disappointing. And it was, the whole knee surgery situation taught me a lot of patience, how to overcome adversity. You know, you work so hard at something for so long. I played for 15 years almost. And all of a sudden, you know, you're not doing it anymore. And it's sort of like an identity crisis. You don't know what you're going to do next. Everything you know is that particular thing, that sport. And so when all of a sudden it's not there anymore and you have to really look at who you are and what you want to do and become or study, it can be quite intimidating. But, you know, you take it day by day, you figure it out.
One of the things I really like talking to people about, and I think athletics just kind of like breeds you into this mindset, is overcoming adversity or how to get through a really negative situation.
Right.
So having this big dream, seeing all this progress that you're making, being in this top 40 Canada camp.
Yeah.
Like what goes through your mind that day or the day after, or like through surgery?
Yeah.
When you've torn your ACL.
So, you know, I think the first time I was very optimistic. I knew that I could recover. I was confident in my recovery. And I had quite a few scholarship opportunities that were still available. And the coaches of those teams, you know, had encouraged me to get better and to rehab. And my scholarship opportunities were still available. But of course, in the back of your mind, there's a little bit of doubt. Like, will I be that? The athlete I was beforehand? Will I be as aggressive? Will I be as fast, as strong? You know, you have all those questions come through your mind. But I think I stayed fairly optimistic. I think it was after my second reconstruction that I was quite down. And you know, I spent the year at home and all my friends had gone off to university and I was having surgery on New Year's and I was going to be on crutches on the ice. And it was just very depressing and hard to look at my life and think, wow, what I thought I would be for so long is not going to be my reality. So now what? So at that point, that's when I focused on my academics.
So was that grade 12 you did the second time?
No, it was the right after grade 12.
Going into university. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So did you have scholarships and like a place that you were going lined up?
Yeah, no. So the timelines. Okay, so I tore my first one, grade 11, end of grade 11, yeah. Coming into my grade 12 year, had the scholarship opportunities sort of dwindle because I had got hit in provincials and partially tore it. Then I went to Calgary for university and tore it in the first week I was there. So I came back from Calgary and rehabbed that whole year before going back to Calgary to pursue my degree. Gotcha. Yeah.
When was the realization that you weren't going to play hockey anymore?
I was in Calgary.
Yeah.
After coming back from my second ACL, I just got on the ice and, I knew I had the ability to play, but I had lost all passion and I just didn't want to take the spot of a girl who really wanted it. And so I stepped down and I stopped playing hockey. I still play for fun, you know, a little shinny here and there, you know, throw the bucket on and go for a skate. But, you know, I decided to kind of step away from hockey. And it was really great because I discovered other things that I was good at.
Where does cycling come in? If hockey's your life for the first 20 years.
Right. Yeah. So I went to school in Calgary. I did... My goal was to get a degree in business and I decided I would split it up. So I did my first 2 years of my business degree in Calgary and then I ran for president of the student union and I was elected. And so I worked at my school for a year doing that. Following that, I went traveling and I went to Southeast Asia, Australia, and New Zealand. And throughout my travels, I would pick a bike up in every city I was and I would just ride everywhere. And yeah, it was exhilarating. I fell in love with riding my bike. You know, as a kid, you ride your bike, you ride it to school, you hang out with all your friends, you know, like you ride bikes everywhere, but I didn't fall in love with bike riding when I was young. It was just a way of getting around. But I think looking back, you know, when you ride your bike, it's that first taste of freedom. And when I was traveling, I felt so free. And yeah, so I would check out all these cities and I'd be bombing down hills and I became obsessed. Like, I just wanted to go so fast. Like, I hit like 92K an hour going downhill one time. And I was like, holy shit, like, this is amazing. Like, I have to do this. I want to become, you know, one of the fastest bike riders in the world. I want to be the fastest rider in Canada. Like, let's go, you know? And all of a sudden that passion was just there and this fuel inside of me. Like, I just had a fire burning. And so I came home And like, let's keep in mind, okay, I was out of shape while traveling, even though I was riding my bike, you know, like you're drinking, you're eating street food, you know, you're not working out when you're traveling, you're backpacking and it's a good time. And when I was in New Zealand, that's where I found a track for the first time. I went to a velodrome in Invercargill, New Zealand.
This is on the same trip.
This is on the same trip.
You pick up bikes. You decide that you want to be the best bike rider or the fastest bike rider in Canada, and then you go find a track while you're still on the trip.
Yes, while I'm on the trip.
You move very quickly.
Yeah, I do. I was like, hey, this is what I want to do. And I was like, it's an Olympic sport. Track cycling is an Olympic sport. I can do this. Like, I just had this feeling inside of me. So I show up at the track and I go up to the office and there was nobody in sight. And I go to the office and I say, I want to ride the track. You know, it's empty right now. And so they said, well, you can give us a donation, right? And I said, all right, well, how much? So I kind of gave them $20. And this really kind gentleman came down to the track with me and for an hour kind of showed me the ins and out of track cycling. And keep in mind, these bikes have no brakes and I'm basically a chubby traveler. Like, you know, I'm like, yeah, I can do this. I'm in my jeans and my Nikes and, like, you know, just having a time. And I get on this track and I was blown away. I mean, I was riding on a 48 degree angle and I was on a bike with no brakes and I felt like I was exactly where I needed to be. Like, it was so crazy, you know, and I had a history of some, you know, crazy sports. After I finished hockey, I went out to Quebec City and did Red Bull crashed ice. And I did skeleton while I was in Calgary. Oh, yeah. So I'm like straight up adrenaline junkie. And when I got on the track, I was just in heaven. I loved it. I loved the idea of going as fast as I possibly can. So I came home and I flew from Queensland back home to Kelowna, BC. I enrolled in school to finish my degree. And I called Team Canada and I said to them, I said, hi, my name is Tegan Cochran and this is my sport history. This is what I want to do. Tell me what I have to do to get there, because there wasn't a ton of resources online. I mean, I tried to do my research, but I'm kind of the girl who likes to go straight to the source. So I call them and I'm just like, hey, you know, like, what do I got to do? Turns out that the big opportunity is at national championships. That's where you kind of get exposure and anyone can go to national championships, right? So, which was foreign to me because in hockey and soccer and sports with a ton of athletes, you have to qualify, you have to win provincials, then you get to nationals. But it wasn't that way with track cycling.
Is there like a time qualifier or something?
No. Everything happens at Nats.
You can just show up.
Oh, yeah.
Carl, do you want to?
Right? Yeah. You guys can show up. Do it. Yeah. So, which can be good and bad, right? But most people know that you're only going there if you're quite serious about the sport.
Sure.
And most people there have trained for a long time. And anyways, so I get there. I get home. I start riding and training, and I'm commuting to Vancouver from Kelowna, right? Because the nearest track's in Burnaby. So I'm in school and I'm driving back and forth like bi-weekly probably to get to Vancouver to ride the track, to learn, to get certified, find a coach and figure out track cycling. I'm watching YouTube videos and yeah, so, you know, I find a coach, which was great. And turns out, you know, I was sort of a natural sprinter because of my background in hockey. I mean, I have thunder thighs, right? Like, I'm strong. I have a ton of power. I have a ton of torque. So sprinting came so natural to me. It was just the whole, like, you know, technical side of cycling that I had to figure out, which takes a long time. It's super important. But I practiced a ton. You know, I was riding my rollers every day. I was studying and cycling, and that was my life for years. I didn't do much else because I knew that I had to make up for the time that every other athlete had spent growing up doing this sport. And so I needed to catch up. And so I spent time catching up. And in September 2016, I went to national championships. And there's four sprint events. And I signed up for all four sprint events. And I got on the podium in all four, which was miraculous. And I was like, I couldn't believe it. But I had worked really hard. I had worked for a year and a half. Solid. And
what's the time frame between when you got home from New Zealand, called 1-800 Team Canada, and just showed up at Nationals?
Right. So I got home in 2015.
Okay.
So in I September. Got home in spring 2015.
Okay.
That summer, I got certified to ride the track. And I got my coach in September that year of 2015. I started my degree program.
Okay.
I had 2 years left to go. In September 2016, 1 year later, I went to national championships.
At that point, are you staying in contact with Team Canada people? Or are you just like, see you next year?
Yeah. Peace. I'll see you guys there. No, you know what? They kind of told me, like, listen, here's a sheet with all of the times that you have to reach in order to like qualify for like an international karting or a national karting, or, you know, they sent me over some resources. And then I got connected with a guy here in BC who is really familiar with the system, and he kind of helped me out. But really, I did most of it on my own. I went and I got tested. I did like VO2 max testing. Yeah, I did quite a bit. I had a great coach for my first year who really showed me the ropes, and he was a very experienced sprinter, and he believed in me, which is really what I needed. I just needed somebody in my corner, you know, to say, hey, you're not crazy. You can do this. Because I knew I could. I just kind of needed somebody to be like, it's possible. Because at that point I was 23 and coming into a new sport, wanting to, you know, reach the highest level. And most people are starting this sport when they're 12, you know, maybe younger. So, you know, I kind of said, well, I have a background in sports and I have a dream. So let's see what happens. And so I guess a year and a half of solid training, I went to Nationals. I got on the podium in all four events, and I got an invitation to come to an integration camp with Team Canada in Toronto following Nationals. And so
how many women get an invitation to go to the integration camp?
It was just me.
So I'm guessing there's other members of Team Canada.
Yes.
But it's like a tryout almost for Team Canada?
Yes, exactly. So an integration is you get tested, right? Every sort of testing. Like, you're getting your skin folded and clamped. And I mean, I don't have my traveler body anymore, right?
That. Like, I did that once. Yeah. It's like a body fat test.
Yeah, totally, right? So that they're pinching you all over your body, and they're doing a bunch of weight tests and speed tests and strength tests and everything that you can imagine. And then based on that, and based on the 2 weeks that I was there, right? The integration camp was 2 weeks. And I was doing the same training program that Olympians were doing. I was training next to people who were just at Rio in 2016. And this is October 2016. I'm next to Olympians. And I'm like, how the hell did I get here? Like, this is crazy. And how am I training with them right now? I mean, it was surreal to me. And so following that camp, you know, the coach at that time, he said, well, you know, we want you to stay. And I said, well, I have to finish my degree. And I fast tracked my degree program. I did a whole semester in the summer. And so I said, I'm graduating in December and I'll be out here. And so I packed my bags up after I graduated in December. And I moved out to Toronto, and I had lived there until till February.
Would you say you lack confidence?
No.
I'm totally joking.
I don't. But I think that, but you know what? I think that's crucial, a crucial trait of pro athletes. And I think it's a crucial trait of entrepreneurs.
100%. Because if you're not confident, it's so easy to see that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Where does it come from?
Well,
growing up in sport, especially when you excel at a sport and you get to a very high level in your country, I'm sure there's a natural level of confidence. But I think something that I think there's a portion of it that isn't learned.
No, I think you're just kind of born. Like, I was always born with the happiness advantage. You know, very much a true optimist. And if I set my mind to something, I believe I can do it. I mean, it's bitten me in the ass before, sure. You know, like sometimes you can be overconfident and you know, you get your ego checked pretty quick.
Yeah.
You know, I've had that happen many times. And so, but that's all part of it, right? But I think I just have self-confidence. I have confidence in my abilities. And so when I know there's something I can do, yes, of course I'm confident, you know? So I grew up naturally, like sports and athleticism was my natural talent. And so it wasn't hard for me to be confident in that. It wasn't hard for me to be confident thinking I can become a Team Canada track cyclist. I believed in myself.
When you're on the plane to Toronto to do the tryout, what was it called?
The integration camp?
Integration. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. Integration camp.
We should have integration camp for the podcast.
Yeah, like, right? The integration
into
camp.
The integration camp.
Yeah. So that
was the 2 week one. Is there moments of like self-doubt or hesitation? Okay.
Oh, hell yeah. I was like, I have never done like, I mean, I had just been cycling competitively for a year.
A year.
You know, and prior to that, I was just riding a bike for a year around countries, and you know what I mean? So I was very green, very, very green. And I knew, you know, cause they had sent me, you know, the itinerary, they sent me who I was living with and, you know, cause they stick you in a team house, right? You're there with 8 other athletes on Team Canada, living, eating, breathing, sleeping next to one another. So it was full on, you know, but at the same time, I kind of use that plane ride to think about everything and to say, okay, well, I'm coming for a reason. They want me here for a reason. And I've worked tirelessly to get to this point. I deserve to be here. And so, sure, I might not be the best yet. Possibly I can become the best. But this is a crucial part in that journey. I need to go through this camp and I need, you know, I think part of it too is if I believed I could be there, then they would want me to stay there. Right. And so I just went and I did what I was told and I trained and I performed the best that I possibly could. And so
how quickly does that mindset change? Cause I think that's something that is very unique that when you're, this is a pretty crazy story, so it's hard to relate it to other things.
Yeah.
But like, you're on the plane, over you're thinking, I don't really have any training in this sport. I've been doing it for a year. These people that I'm going to compete against have been doing it for 15.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How does your mind shift into optimism and saying, well, I just podiumed in 4 races at the at nationals. If they didn't want me here, I would eat. How does that alter into a positive outlook?
So I think for me, the first thing I thought was be resourceful. The people who are there know way more than I do about the sport. And so use them to gain knowledge. And if I open myself up to what that is, I will learn much quicker and become faster, you know? And so that was really important because I didn't like something that was very different from track cycling compared to growing up in a team sport is it's extremely individual. So even though I'm there and there's other female sprinters, we're actually all fighting for the same spot because it's not a team sport. We're all fighting for the same spot. And so, you know, I want to learn from her, but I also want to take her spot. It's a very interesting dynamic, right? And so that, I think, was one of the hard things mentally to overcome. But it didn't stop me from learning from everybody, both male and female, and coaches and staff. You know, I tried to just be a sponge, but, you know, I was at a disadvantage in terms of my years of experience. And also, I think I was at a disadvantage because I had so much life experience as well, coming from other sports, having gone through university, having backpacked. You know, a lot of the athletes there had just been doing that sport for a long time. And so I think it was a disadvantage for me because I sort of knew all the great things life had to offer. And when we were in the thick of training and we're training 50 hours a week and I haven't left the city of Milton, which is in the GTA, and I'm living in a bubble and I'm living in a team house with 8 girls and I'm isolated and I'm away from my family, I'm away from my friends. I think, you know, having that experience in my life was a disadvantage to me because I was like, I don't know if I like this environment, you know? And so, yeah, that was pretty crazy. There's a lot of mental strength that goes into being an athlete. I have a ton of respect for people who do it for decades and decades at the highest level, and not even decades, years and years, you know, at the highest level. I mean, it's a mind war out there.
That would be, well, first of all, living in a house with 8 women kind of terrifies me.
Yes.
Was there much connection with the outside world, or was it like pretty strict?
Oh, it was very isolating. Yeah.
Was it?
Very.
Like,
yeah.
Curfews and stuff like that?
No, no curfews, but you have to understand that you're living with the person who you want to beat.
Yeah.
And so they're watching you and you're watching them. What you're eating, what time you're going to bed, what time you're waking up, what treatments you're getting. You know, treatments, I mean massage, physio. And so it's, you have to understand you're with the most competitive people in the world, you know, and you're trying to beat them. And so you're not going out and you're not partying because you have to wake up at, you know, 6 a.m. the next day and get going for a full day of training, you know, excruciating training that, you know, gym sessions that last 3 hours long and leave some people crying and feeling broken down. Like, you know, as a sprinter and a power athlete, like, there's so much building that has to happen. And, you know, when you push your body to an absolute extreme, or you build and you build and you build, and it becomes so exhausting, right? Not just physically, but mentally and emotionally. And so, yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of people who dive into the mental health of athletes. And I think it can kind of be a bit of a scary situation sometimes because you get these highly competitive people who want to win and are also, you know, maybe not listening to their bodies or their minds as much as they should be. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was just crazy experience.
I could probably ask you 1,000 questions about this crazy experience.
Oh, yeah.
Because I love it. And not that I was ever at that level, but have had similar experience in terms of like being, and I was team sport. So mm-hmm. I was away for university basketball, did some like team, well, Canadian like national training yeah. program type things where in hotels with like 5 or 6 other dudes in the same room.
Oh, yeah.
And you're just like swamped with Nike gear, but at the same time, you're like, I really want to kick your ass tomorrow.
Yeah.
So it is a weird environment to be in.
Yeah, it's really crazy. Yeah, and it's a strange environment. It was very hard for me. It was very hard. You know, because it was very redundant as mm-hmm. well. You know, every day it's the same thing. Every day you're waking up, you're eating one of your 2 planned breakfasts, right? Oatmeal and eggs and spinach. No. And, You know, but everything is so calculated. Everything matters. It matters how much sleep you got the night before. It matters what you eat in the morning. It matters what you ate at dinner. That will determine how you perform the next day. Every single thing matters. And so you kind of become obsessed with yourself in a way, because you're so aware of how your body's reacting to something, or what you have to say no to, or what you have to say yes to. And it's, everything is about performance, and you are the performer. And so it's crazy.
These are the stories I really like sharing, in terms of like behind the scenes, what actually goes on day to day basis, mm-hmm. in athletics and in business world. Because mm-hmm. from the outside, it seems very glamorous. Social media, of course, makes it look glamorous. I know.
Yeah.
But a lot of people who are watching a professional athlete being like, that's such a cool life. And there's a few sports in the world where you make a ton of money mm-hmm. doing it. But there's a lot of other sports where you're a professional athlete where you're not making that much money.
Absolutely.
And you're working as hard or harder. And it's really not glamorous at all.
Yeah. So that was really tough for me, right? Yeah. Because as a Canadian amateur athlete, right? I say amateur because I really think that people who are dedicating full time to their sport and are performing at the world level are pro athletes, but we're considered amateur because we're not getting paid like pro athletes, right? And so, I mean, you're getting paid next to nothing, right? You're doing this just because you love it. You're not doing it for anything else. You're not doing it for financial reward. You're doing it because you love it and because you have a dream. It's not because it's advancing your career or it's, you know, allowing you to be financially stable. You know, majority of athletes really struggle financially. And so, yeah, it's not glamorous, you know, and from the outside, sure, it can be, because, you know, we have, you know, really nice sponsors and we have great gear and we get to travel, you know, all over the world and do a sport that we love. But, you know, another thing, it was like, someone had said to me, well, it's amazing. Like, you were just in Portugal and Switzerland. And I said, yeah, but all I saw was the airport and the track. So it's not that glamorous, you know? And that was really hard for me because something that caused me to actually shift my discipline, right? So I was a sprinter and it was hard for me because, yes, naturally I have quite a bit of torque. I'm a power athlete, but I also grew up playing soccer and running and swimming. And so I have endurance, and I would look at the endurance athletes and I just so badly felt like I wanted to be one of them. You know, I was like, I don't want to be a sprinter. Like, I genuinely love riding my bike. And as a sprinter, we spend more time in the gym than we do on the track, right? Because we're all about like power, right? So you're squatting max squats and powerlifting and doing all that. But I wanted to be on my bike. You know, that's why I fell in love with it. And I got so wrapped up in this extrinsic reward of possibly becoming an Olympian, right? Because it's not guaranteed. It's a possibility that you'll get there. But just because you're on Team Canada, it doesn't guarantee that you're going to the Olympics. You still have to qualify. You still have to beat, you know, your teammates to get that spot. And so I did a lot of hard reflection in the team house, right? And so I'm sitting there and I'm like, okay, you know, I've been here for, you know, over a year and it's been a grind. And am I happy? Or am I doing this for possibly getting this reward? And the harder I looked at it, the more I realized that I wasn't doing truly the discipline that I loved. I was more so doing it because I wanted to be an Olympian. And, you know, someone had said to me, you know, a teammate had said, if you're doing this to become an Olympian, stop now. Because, and another person had referred to the Olympic Village as the Village of Broken Hearts, which is very true. And there's a reason why a ton of Olympians suffer from depression post-Olympics, is because everyone's aiming for this one thing and only one person gets it. Only one person gets the gold medal, right? And so, and you have to get there, right? So here I am. I'm on Team Canada. I'm living in a city. I'm isolated from things in my life. And I don't really feel like I'm in the right discipline. I feel like this all happened so fast. Am I actually doing what I love? Am I actually doing what I'm supposed to be doing? And I thought seriously hard about this. I mean, like most athletes, working with a sports psychologist to sort through a lot of the emotions I was feeling, because there's this one part of you that's like, well, I've worked so hard to be here and now I'm at the top, you know? And that year I had won and become a 3-time national champion, you know? And I was like, oh, okay, I'm here. But yet I go home and I cry after I win those medals and I'm like, I'm confused. I don't get it. Why do I feel this way? But it was because I wasn't doing truly what I loved. I wanted to ride my bike more. I didn't want to be a sprinter. And so being an Olympic sprinter, if I was to make it there, and I was unhappy, it wouldn't matter that I got there. And so I decided I was going to switch disciplines. And I said to the coach, I said, listen, I want to be a endurance rider and I'm going to go back west. And so I packed my bags up.
What was their reaction like that?
Well, they tried to get me to stay. Right. So,
especially I'm assuming if you're winning 3 gold medals at a nationals, they're fairly excited about you potentially being on an Olympic team.
Right. Yeah. And so I think, like any good coach, they try to retain their athletes, right, who are performing. And you know, I did feel my coach saw potential in me, but it was more so me, you know. I wanted to feel passionate. Really, I did. I wanted to feel passionate. And I lost that feeling. And so every day was difficult. Every day was hard. I mean, I would get up and I was, I don't want to do this. I don't feel like I'm in the right place. I don't feel like I'm doing the right thing. And so I'm going against myself because yet I'm like, yeah, but I'm on Team Canada. This is what I've always wanted. But I didn't think it would feel this way. Should it feel this way? And so I decided to make a change and I packed up my Toyota Corolla 2003 in February. And I called my mom and I said, hey, mom, I'm going to come home. So, you know, she flew out to Toronto and we drove across the country. We went down to Chicago and we went up and I stopped in Winnipeg and I saw my sister who lives there. And honestly, when I had left the program, I felt free. I felt excited and I felt nervous, of course, because I'm leaving behind what I thought was my dream and I'm taking this huge risk, right? And I'm saying, okay, well, I'm going back west and I'm going to become an endurance cyclist, right? So I take a huge risk and I find myself in Vancouver and I sign with 2 road teams. One American team and 1 Canadian team. And I'm like, okay, this is off to a good start. Here we go. Like, this is going to be a great season for me. I'm in great shape from training. And, you know, this American team, this American road team that I had signed with, it was a 4 race circuit. We went, 5 races, San Francisco, New York, Milan, Barcelona, and London. And, so we do the opening race in San Francisco in April. And the next weekend we fly to New York to do the second race. And I have the most devastating accident of my life. I crashed twice within the hour. I crashed twice.
Holy
yeah.
Shit.
So yeah. I was crashed out the first time and hit the barricades of the race and flew over my handlebars and I hit my head and I thought I split open my eye and I had a black eye and I got off the course and I said to someone, am I bleeding? Like, my eyes swollen, my skin suit's ripped open, and my bike's okay. But, you know, I hit my head pretty hard. And looking back, hindsight's a beautiful thing. Looking back, I think I probably should have stopped after that first crash. But I didn't, because I wanted to keep going. And so I got back in and I decided I would go to the front of the race because that's where I felt it was most safe. And so I was leading the race and I crashed myself out and I flew over the handlebars, landed straight on my face. I lost my front teeth. I had deep, deep lacerations on my lips and my chin, and had a compound concussion, which took me about 7 months to recover from. Eight months.
Was it that long?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was a very, very bad concussion. And
you're just kind of getting over it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So that was crazy because that threw all of my plans out the window.
Based on what I've heard from your story, and I'm sure it's a very summarized story that we've talked about in the last half an hour, it doesn't seem like anything's going to stop you.
Hopefully not.
So although this is a pretty crazy crash, how do you turn this into now a business opportunity?
Right. So post-crash, I, like any person suffering from a concussion, I'm in a dark room and have to stay out of sunlight and basically live the vampire life.
How long did that last? How long were you in a dark room for?
You know what? Right after my accident, you know, it's crazy because it wasn't until I had my teeth put back in that I realized the severity of my head injury. But I would say, like, you know, I was down and out for a good couple months for sure. And it, you know, concussions play tricks on your mind too. Totally. Like, it's very depressing and it's hard to regulate emotions, and, you know, sunlight and any bright lights irritate you. And, you know, it's just a very complicated injury. I think out of all my injuries, by far my concussion has been the worst. You know, forgetting words, mixing similar words up, forgetting names, forgetting what I did the day before. Like, it was very confusing, and I was angry. I was very angry. But during that time, I said, well, I got to make money. And so I ended up starting a little web design business. My mom was... and sorry, is a designer, and she's always inspired me, and I've always loved working with computers, and I understand marketing, and marketing and web design kind of go hand in hand. You can create really effective websites if you have a marketing background because you know how to tell a story and position things in a particular way. So I started building websites and it sort of took off, and you know, that was... it was kind of a beautiful thing that happened because I fell in love with it a little bit. And then I landed a consulting gig, and because I just felt like with my education and my sport experience and my visual, you know, design knack, I guess you could say, I just felt inclined to help people. You know, I felt like I could, you know, help with writing documents. You know, I can do a lot of HR documents. I can assess a situation and figure out the problem and find the fastest way from A to B. Like, that's what I'm good at. Give me the place you want to be and I will find the fastest way there for you. You know, so I guess that's what I help businesses do, and I help them become more efficient, and yeah, so that is what I've been doing, I guess, for the past 8 months.
Not that I think you will have any issue cold calling, because you cold called Team Canada. But a lot of young people getting into self-employment, wanting to start their own business, the intimidating thing is finding customers.
Oh, yeah.
Where do you begin?
So The first person who helped me get my first client was a sponsor of mine.
Cool. Okay. Connections.
Yeah, connection.
Networking is huge.
Networking's massive. Like, that is what I've spent my life doing, really, is networking with every person possible. When I was living out in Calgary and I ran for president of the student union, I had to do campaigning. I mean, all that is just networking, right? And shaking people's hands, talking to people face to face, like getting up in their business, you know, in a nice way. And just helping people, really. I think I never shy away from an opportunity. I never shy away from talking to somebody or sharing with them what I do or how I can help them, or wanting to know what areas they need help in. And I think the most important thing is doing a good job. You know, every client I put time and energy into, and I treat it like they're my only client, and I treat it like they're my client, or they're my last client, or whatever it is. I just want my clients to feel like they have my full attention, because they do. And I think that goes a long way, because the referral system that's built from good client relations is magnificent, you know? And so word of mouth is definitely, for me, one of the strongest marketing tools in my toolkit.
Cutting corners is detrimental to growth.
Absolutely.
So I like that you said that, because that's something like in our real estate business we are huge on, is just like doing an exceptional job every single time.
Absolutely.
And it, exactly what you said, word of mouth is a huge thing. Mm-hmm. Networking is of ultra importance, is just meeting as many people as you can.
Oh yeah.
I like they brought those two things up. Okay. Yeah. We are approaching 6:30, so maybe we should wrap up, but I wonder your biggest goal for 2019, whether it's cycling, business, or both.
Business. Yeah. You know what? Like, following my crash, it's taken me a long time to sort of get back to a place where I feel excited about getting on my bike, and I'm back riding again, but I'm doing it in a way that makes me happy.
Yeah.
And I'm doing it because I love it, and I don't want that to change in 2019. I want my bike to stay as something that I love, and I want my business to evolve. You know, I really don't know what 2019 holds. All I've said to myself is every day I'm just going to do my best. Like, every day I'm going to try. And so I don't have any idea where that's going to lead me, because for the first time in my life, I don't have a clear goal, which is, you know, something I'm not used to, because I generally set very high goals for myself, and, you know, I go for them. And now I, you know, my goals are a bit different because of my experiences I've had over the last couple of years. You know, I truly want to be a fulfilled, well-rounded, kind person rather than a, you know, person who's reached a particular level or has this accolade or this accomplishment. You know, like, that stuff just doesn't matter to me right now. I don't care about that. Maybe that will change. I don't know, but I just want to try my best. I want to figure it out. I want to help people. I want to help myself. I want to learn more about marketing and design and be the best consultant I can be and help people grow their businesses. I mean, 2019. I mean, 2018 was just, I'm done. Like, let's leave 2018 in the dust, because 2019 is going to be great.
I liked what you said earlier about just being like new to the business world and not really knowing what you're doing.
Oh yeah.
And my comment was, I don't think anybody really does. Yeah. It's just like, wake up every morning and figure shit out.
You just figure it out.
There's going to be a lot of problems. You're just going to have to figure it out.
Oh yeah. You just kind of roll with it, right?
Especially when you're self-employed, there's no one to blame things on.
I know.
You can't be like, oh, you got to talk to my boss. That's over my pay grade.
I'm just going to start blaming you, Danny. Oh,
it's sure. That's literally my job, is to just like put out fires now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, that's true. You, but that's why it's important to, you know, hold a high standard for yourself, right? And do the best you can with every client or every project or whatever it is you're trying to do, just do your best every day.
I like it.
Good things will come.
One thing I say all the time is I'm like obsessed with consistently growing personally and professionally every day.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you got to be.
Something I always ask each guest to do at the end is to make the final statement. That can be like a piece of advice for like aspiring young athletes, new people into the business world. You can kind of go any way you want with this. Could be like the best thing that a coach told you growing up that has stuck with you or something like that.
I think, simply put, trust your gut. Trust your gut. Yeah. When something feels right, go with it. If something feels wrong, step away. Don't do something that you're uncomfortable with. You know, or not uncomfortable. Uncomfortable is okay. Don't do something that feels wrong. Stay true to who you are and trust your gut.
I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Tegan, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much.
That was so much fun. And you are more impressive than Nick had actually relayed to me. So I'm glad we got to sit down and chat.
Thanks, Nick.
And I know you said you don't have that many friends in Vancouver. So.
Right? Yeah, you're my friend now?
We got to go grab a beer sometime.
Okay, sounds good to me. Absolutely.
Guys, thanks so much for watching or listening. Tegan has an awesome Instagram. Follow her story as she gets back on the bike and her little marketing consulting business grows as well in 2019. Hit me up on Instagram if you have any feedback. Benny.Duma. Later.